athlete, we saw the true competitive spirit of sports with so many that competed and raced at the Fargo Marathon. And, you know, watching a race like that, it really does remind you that everybody who's running, at least in the full marathon, has got a story of some kind. And that's certainly true of Northfield's Nicole Porat. She ran the marathon here for the second time last week, and nobody beat her last Saturday. She covered the course in 2 hours, 50 minutes, and 49 seconds. Her personal best, 2 hours, 44 minutes, and 46 seconds. And she was hoping for a new personal best, but in the heat and humidity that transpired last week, it made it tough for anybody that was trying to hit a time goal in that full marathon. And none of us had really trained much in the heat and humidity, especially that the full marathon crew had to deal with. And it really took a toll on her the last 5 miles. But still, she ended up winning the event and was very happy afterwards. Her family, good friends with an uncle and an aunt of mine, that came up from the Twin Cities to run last weekend. So we invited the whole pack over to our house for a grill out later in the day. Got to meet Nicole and her husband, Nate, and some other family members who were there with them. Had a great time and got to hear Nicole's story. And I thought it would be a perfect fit for Spirit of Sports. So she was good enough to give us a little bit of time yesterday. She's running a 5K for one of her sponsors this morning. So I talked to her yesterday afternoon. And my first question, after all the hot conditions running last week, how's she feeling a few days later?
You know, actually not bad, considering I recover pretty quick from these now that my mileage is higher. And this week is still a lighter week. It's only 40 to 45 miles. And I feel a little slower, which you always do after a marathon, but I mean, I'm not sore at all or anything like that. So it's kind of nice.
that's pretty good. If your off week is 40 to 45 miles, that to me sounds like the Bataan Death March or something like that. So good for you. I guess it's all what you're used to, right? Well, we had a chance to meet you, Nicole, last week after the marathon and your big win there. And it was really a lot of fun for our family to get to know you and your husband, Nate, some of your family members, too. And it was a lot of fun to hear you talk about the race. So as you kind of look back on it in your mind, can you give us a little 30-second recap of the race and how things went as you moved along the 26.2?
Yeah, sure. I don't remember a lot about the race itself. The miles just sort of flow by, but I mean, I started off, and from mile one, could sort of feel the humidity on my chest, so I knew then that I'd have to be a little cautious. And luckily, I didn't have any specific pace in mind that I had to be hitting. I was just racing for the win, so went out at about 6:30, which was my plan, and was hoping to bring it down to sub 6:20s, but just the legs didn't have it, and I could tell again that paces were just a lot harder with the humidity. And then once the sun came out, there was another big difference in pace for me. But about 16 miles was still at about 6:25-ish. And at that point, I had 10 miles to go, and I told myself that it was just a kind of a practice progression run, and my goal was to run sub 6:20s then from then until the finish. So I actually felt really strong, and then it wasn't until the last 10K when it really got warm, and that's when sub 6:20s just weren't possible. So I think the last 3 miles were 6:40, 6:55, and 7:05. So that's pretty rare for me to be running those kind of paces. So I knew I was struggling.
One thing that people maybe don't know about you that haven't had a chance to get to know you like our family has is that you had an episode involving the heat some time ago, and you were telling us that that's really changed how you perform in the heat going forward. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, it dates back even to college. My first 10K, I don't know if it was 5 miles in or how far it was in. It was a really warm day, and I actually collapsed on the track. And then NCAAs, my senior year, same thing, very warm day. Ended up running until I couldn't run anymore, so I am just more susceptible to the heat. And I had another incident earlier this year. It was the second warm day in April. So, you know, went out the first day and just did 3 miles and could tell my body wasn't used to the heat because I'd been training in 30-degree weather for the longest time, and all of a sudden it was 75.
Right.
And then the next day I had a 5K, and same sort of thing. I mean, I finished, but it was a death march that last mile. And ever since then, my body hasn't reacted quite the same to heat. So it is sort of, when you have an incident like that, I feel like it does take your body, it does take a toll on your body for a while where you just don't react as normally.
Mm. You've been able to run the Fargo Marathon now a couple times, right, Nicole?
Yep, number two.
Okay, just your thoughts on the event. We tend to hear a lot of good comments from people about they love the fan interest and the whole city really gets behind everybody on race day. Just your thoughts on the event, having been here twice now and having a chance to have won it here this last weekend. Just your thoughts on the race and how it's all put together and where it ranks in some of the races that you go to in terms of things that you might look forward to.
Yeah, it's really high on my list, actually, just because of the crowd support and the fact that I feel like the whole town kind of comes out to cheer on the runners and is really behind the event. It's pretty awesome. And then the finish, you can't beat the finish, coming down the ramp into the Fargo Dome. I mean, other than probably the Olympic trials or my Olympic trials qualifier when you know you have it in the bank, so that's special just because of that. I mean, this finish ranks right up there with those two. And I specifically chose this as my spring marathon. I don't race often, so chose this one, again, just because of the crowd support and it's because they do such a good job putting it on.
And then there's the barbecue at the Hallstrom's later that day that obviously
yes,
is a big
exactly.
highlight of the weekend, right? I know the entire community really enjoyed your win, and it was hearing the interviews later and hearing your story in the papers the next morning. I think you're definitely somebody who's very easy to cheer for, and I think it really... For people that know you, people that know running, people that have been around the race, I think it was definitely something that a lot of people really were encouraged. We're glad to see you do so well. I think part of any good event is to learn maybe what could be better. So from someone like yourself that's run a lot of high-level marathons, what could this event do maybe in future years that might even make it better? Do you have any suggestions on things that maybe they could fine-tune for years to come?
The course is a little tougher, even though it is flat. There's a ton of turns and some hairpin turns. So if they wanted to make it a little faster, perhaps rerouting the course a little bit so there'd be kind of greater stretches of long where you can hold your pace a little bit better would be good. And then perhaps starting earlier would alleviate some of the heat concerns. I mean, you never know what kind of weather you're going to get. But I'm always a fan of starting as early as possible.
Yeah,
that's about it. It's
been like 40 degrees every day here until that weekend was the first.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So tell us about the turns now. And I imagine part of the reason that this year, the river, they were concerned about flooding. And so they had to kind of redraft the course. So maybe there were more turns than there might typically be if they would run their standard course. But for those that aren't familiar with running, how do turns and those tight turns, how does that affect your pace and the way you run?
It just breaks it up a bit. I tend to be a runner that just gets in a rhythm and just finds that stride and that cadence and goes with it. And every time I turn, you're breaking that stride and that rhythm and having to find it again. So it's a lot harder for me. It's a lot harder to find a pace and lock into it. So because of that, my splits were more... all over the board. They were, 10 seconds.
Yeah.
A mile different versus normally I'm within a second or two each mile.
Yeah, so it definitely is hard for somebody to get in a rhythm when there's different turns in that. And I can see that even just doing a couple of half marathons now for sure. I want to ask you a little bit about your world record because I think this is so cool that you are the indoor women's world record holder in the marathon. 2 hours, 57 minutes, and you ran that, I believe, down at Gustavus where you went to school. You broke the world record by 11 minutes, and that seems pretty cool. When you're in a year of training and you're looking at different events, what makes you think, let's run an indoor marathon, 150 laps on a 280-meter track? what makes you think that sounds like a good idea?
It doesn't. And the only reason I had it on my radar is last year someone sent me an article in Runner's World where a woman had set it at 3:08. And so they sent it to me knowing that I have the Zumi Ai Indoor Marathon held here in Northfield. Literally it was just a one sentence forward that says, you have to do this.
Yep.
And so knew that it was within sight. And anytime you can break a world record, you got to do it no matter how awful of an event it may be. And it, I shouldn't say that it was as awful. It really, it's not as bad as it sounds. But yeah, it's 150 laps. They have you switch directions every half an hour. Mm. So you'd, they'd put out a cone at 30 minutes, and then as you pass the cone, then you'd move out into lane two or three until everyone had switched directions, and then you'd, you know, commence with the next 30 minutes the opposite direction. So it's interesting. It, I mean, it's a whole different spin on racing because you don't know where you're at. You don't know if you're at mile 16 or if you're at mile 20. I mean, you have a general sense of time, but no sense of miles. Mm. So that was interesting. And then keeping your pace up is hard because the corners are so sharp. Because the jogging track at St. Olaf, where it was held, is pretty square-like. So just trying to take the corners hard, and obviously you're doing then 600 corners throughout the course of a marathon. That made it tough as well.
I love your quote after it. You said, "I must take the time to mention that I know that this is an obscure world record, and in no way do I think I'm a world-class runner. I'm just merely the fastest crazy woman to run an indoor marathon." I thought that was a great quote. It says a lot about you. We know better than that. We think you're pretty awesome anyway. So congrats on the record there. I want to ask you quickly, before we have a little break in our conversation about the Olympic trials, you made it in 2012. How does that experience rank with some of the cool things you've done in running?
That is the pinnacle for me. I think because it was such a far-fetched goal for me when I first threw it out there and first started running more competitively. So I think it just holds a very, very special spot in my heart. And plus, I mean, for anyone that's competed at any level to get to the Olympic trials and line up with the women that you've always looked up to, women or men that you've always looked up to, and potentially have a shot at making the Olympic team, I mean, you can't beat it. The finish line there is the best, I mean, the most, how do I describe it? Most vivid memory that I have. Mm. I mean, it was a looped course. It was three loops and a small loop. So you ran through the finish line then multiple times. And I thought that would be sort of a drag because you'd finish one and you'd still have two to go. But they have, I mean, the finish line has bleachers set up on both sides, and they're filled with people with American flags just shouting, "Go USA!" And they have Marines down the center of the finish line chute standing at full salute. The middle, I came through the first time and had goosebumps. So, yeah, I'll never forget that experience, and that's, I really, really want to make it back in 2016.
We're visiting with Nicole Porras. She is the 2013 Fargo Marathon Women's Champion. We'll be back with more with Nicole right after this. You're listening to Steve Sports Saturday on AM 1100 The Flag. Welcome back to Steve Sports Saturday on AM 1100 The Flag. We're visiting with Nicole Porras. She is the champion of the Fargo Marathon for this year. Won the race in 2 hours, 50 minutes, and 49 seconds. And Nicole's been good enough to take some time here to visit with us here today on Steve Sports Saturday. We're actually visiting a couple days ahead of time because she's got an event coming up this weekend. Nicole, tell us about the Spunky Puppy 5K. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the race offhand, but you're racing in something pretty cool on Saturday with your dog.
Yep, the Fast and the Furry 5K9.
There you go. That's a better name than what I gave it. So, yeah, so tell me what that's like to run with a pet with you, because you got to worry about more than just your pace. You got to worry about the puppy as well.
Yeah, well, we train together all the time. So she probably does 50 to 60 miles a week with me. So we've logged, I don't know how many thousands of miles together. She's a Beasley, and yeah, she's just built to run. Racing, we've only raced once together, and you know, she's a really good training partner. She runs right next to me, doesn't pull, but yeah, that first 5K that we entered, she knew that we were racing. And then it just, I mean, she gets a little ahead of you and just pulls, so it's kind of fun to be, you know, propelled to a fast 5K time. So we'll see how she does. She's currently undefeated.
Very
we'll
nice.
See if we can keep it that way.
Yeah, well, it would change the sport of marathon racing if you could have a little little pull from the front every once in a while, right? You kind of draft along.
Kidding.
It would make it a lot more fun. And I've got to guess, whenever you're running with somebody, whether it's a person or an animal, I've got to think that's pretty cool just to have some companionship there. So I want to ask you a little bit. You talked earlier about the heat, and I'm just wondering, for someone like yourself who set 2016 Olympic trials as a goal, What is that like for you to have in the back of your mind? I've got to think that it's something that always kind of stays with you, that, you know, you can be having a great run like you did this past Saturday, and if the sun comes out and the humidity turns up, it might be a deal breaker as far as being able to run a time like that. How much does that weigh on you, Nicole, as you're running?
Yeah, that's a concern, not going to lie. I mean, my coach and I just met this week to map out my training for Chicago, which will be where I first try to hit my qualifier. And so, I mean, we map out 20 weeks, and I'll be all in for all of it. I mean, everything from training 100, I think we're averaging 100 miles a week over the course of the 20-week training cycle. Max is 130 miles a week. So just a ton of miles, and then all the little things that I know I'm going to need to do, just, I mean, to give myself the best shot of hitting that standard. So you do put in all that work, and then it comes down to one day, and the heat for me is such a big factor, weather just in general, and so that can take it away from you. So that is tough, but you just have to, I mean, believe that good things will come, and if it doesn't happen at Chicago because of weather, maybe I can bounce back and do a marathon later in November or December and try to get it there. But, yeah, that's the one thing you can't control, and it's too bad because it's a lot of effort, a lot of work on the line on race day.
For sure. One thing I love about your story and visiting with you last weekend is you told us about leaving your job in the corporate world. Nicole was the controller at Red Wing Shoes, a very lucrative position in the corporate world, and she walked away from it here a few months back because she had a dream. And her dream is different than what you might think about. And Nicole's dream, as she was telling us, is to make the 2016 Olympic trials and just get a chance to be as good as she can be. So, Nicole, I want to ask you, there's two parts to that. Number one, walking away from that job to really chase your goal. And number two, where I want to start, is your goal is not necessarily to make the Olympic team because you know that that would be a very high bar, but you're just trying to give yourself the best chance possible to see how good you can be. And maybe that means Olympic trials, which would be a great highlight. But a lot of people might wonder, why give up all that, Nicole, for just a chance to make the Olympic trials when maybe making the Olympic team would be pretty difficult to do? So tell us a little bit about your thoughts and about setting that particular goal and why that seemed like a good trade-off to leave your job at Red Wing Shoes.
Well, it sort of stemmed from the 2012 trials. I qualified that June, and the trials were that January. So I was one of the last qualifiers to make it. They have a two-year period of time. And in between there was budget season at Red Wing Shoe, which is always just a very, very busy time of year. And so I was able to train for the trials, but was just always running tired and, I mean, long nights. I mean, 12 hours was sort of a regular for me, plus I had an hour and a half commute. So I look back on that and I wonder what I could have done if I had, I mean, hadn't been working so many hours and had actually recovered and done all the little things. And so part of it stemmed from a few regrets that I had for 2012. And then part of it was just sort of wanting to see what I could do. And it was a big deal for me to step away from a position that I truly did love. And I'm very proud of my education and how I've moved up in the corporate world. But I always knew that, also knew that I could come back to it versus you can't get your marathon lengths back. Your peak years are from about 28 to 32, 33. And it's not like when I'm 50, I can be like, okay,
right.
So now let's go back to see what I can do. So, yeah, it was just about no regrets. And you're right. I mean, in regards to making the Olympic team, I mean, unless an absolute miracle happens, I will not make the Olympic team. They take three to the Olympics at the trials to finish top three. And, I mean, most of the women that make the team are mid-220s women. So my PR is 244. I think on my best day, I might be able to crack 240. So even on my best day, I'd probably be about 15 minutes slower than the women that'll make the team. But again, for me, it's not about, I mean, making or not making the Olympic team. It's just about the story and hanging up the shoes without regrets, hanging up the shoes and saying, yep, this is my absolute true PR, and I did what I could, and I'm really happy with that.
And I think it's a wonderful story. I say more power to you, and I think it's great that you're giving it a try just to see. I think any of us who've competed in any kind of athletics we're always interested to see how good we could get. And maybe that's world class, maybe it's something just a hair short of that. But either way, I think you've got an awesome chance to really make some great memories. And I think it's wonderful. Like I told everybody at the barbecue on Saturday, these stories are the spice of life, and I just love hearing them. And I think it's great that you're giving it a try, so we're really pulling for you. Now, the running world has opened up some doors for you to do some coaching and some speaking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this again, it was something that I'd always wanted to do when I was at Red Wing, to reach out a little bit more back into the running community, do a little bit of coaching, but I just didn't have the time. In terms of speaking, I had done a little bit at local businesses, but now have done a lot more with Marathon Expos and other businesses. And trying to reach out to corporations as well to just talk about dreaming big. And the crux of my story is the 2012 trials. And when I started working with a coach, it should not have been possible for me to make the 2012 standard, which is 2:46. I was a 1:24:30 half marathoner at the time. So obviously, you double that, that's 2:49 at best. And you have to run faster than 2:46 to make the trials. So to run two half marathons back-to-back faster than what I had just done on a pretty good race day, and I'd run in college. It wasn't like I was untrained. It should have been impossible, but I latched onto that goal and just wanted it more than anything else and did all the little things that I needed to do and surrounded myself with a great team. And that, that's true in athletics, and that's true just with life, no matter what your goals are. If they're job-related, what do you need to do to get that next promotion or make that career switch? You just need to surround yourself with the right people and then take those steps each day. It needs to be consistent in order to reach your goals. So, yeah, I'm just really passionate about reaching out to others, and especially young women athletes. All too often, I think there's too much pressure put on women, and I see them not continuing to run either in college or not running after college. So that's just something near and dear to my heart. Mm. Now I have the opportunity to do some online coaching, which has been really fun, to live through other athletes and learn with them and kind of help them to dream big. So I have just a few athletes that I coach. I don't want to coach very many, because I tend to be very invested in their own personal goals. But it's fun that the few athletes that I have are all people of that same bloodline where they're like, I wonder what I could do. Mm. That sort of dreaming big mentality. So it's fun to be a part of their story.
Well, I think it's awesome. If people want to find out more about you, maybe get in touch with you about a speaking opportunity or maybe some coaching, how can they do that, Nicole?
My blog is probably the best place to start, nicolerunning.blogspot.com. And there's links there to my email or ways to contact me or just learn more about my story and who I am.
Well, if you want to be part of Team Nicole, you can. You can actually sign up on her blog to let her know that you're behind her and that you're supporting her. And I can't think of a better person to get behind. Nicole is absolutely somebody that you can cheer for, and it's been so much fun to get to know you and Nate here over the last week or so, and I really appreciate your time today, Nicole. Thanks so much for sharing some of your story with us, and we wish you all the best. We'll be cheering from afar for a great summer, and best of luck as you continue to train.
Yeah, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
You got it. Nicole Porras, she is a champion of the 2013 Fargo Women's Marathon. Nicole, thanks so much for your time. Have a great day.
Thanks.